This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
On today's program, a look behind the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit that we've been talking about recently, which is at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. We're talking with Reza Levitt, the executive director at the Bible Lands Museum in Jerusalem, who is also the curator of the Dead Sea Scrolls traveling exhibit, which is at the Museum of the Bible. Reza, first, I have to ask you, how is the Bible Lands Museum dealing with all of what's going on right now?
Well, interesting question. We, at the very beginning of this round of the war, if I can say that, we met very quickly. We have kind of a long-standing list of objects that need to be removed to our safe space in case of emergency. And so we started very quickly with that. We probably removed over 300 objects to our, underground safe area. We were closed for a few days, and now, according to Homefront Command rules, we're allowed to host up to 50 people at a time. So we've been running activities for families whose kids are going a little stir crazy because there's been no school for the last few weeks. We're certainly not open the way we typically are, and quite a number of objects have been removed.
Okay. Well, I understand you've been involved in a number of Dead Sea Scroll traveling exhibits over the years. So what goes into putting an exhibit like this together, and how might the one currently at the Museum of the Bible be different from other Dead Sea Scrolls exhibits?
Sure. Well, first I can say it's a tremendous amount of work. It's very much a large and varied team, and everybody brings something to the table. The work on this particular exhibition started probably 4 or 5 years ago, and that was just thinking about the story that we wanted to tell. We knew from the outset that in this tour we wanted to emphasize science and technology and the ways in which the science of archaeology contributes to our understanding of the scrolls and the period. So we want to put a particular emphasis on that. And then our goal has always been to focus on the newest objects that are being excavated from the relevant sites. In this case, it's ancient Jerusalem. And we were able very early on to secure some really recently excavated objects from the so-called Pilgrimage Road. That is the long road that's just open to the public, but been excavated for the last few years. And so we were able to take objects from that area, including an actual paver that people can walk on.
That's amazing.
And also the Magdala stone from Magdala in the Galilee, which is a very interesting inscribed stone that was found in an ancient synagogue. So we start building the story around the objects. We always want to bring the latest that we're able to take out of the country to display. And then, of course, there's the selection of the scrolls themselves. At the Museum of the Bible, you have 3 rounds of 8 scrolls per round. And we want to make sure that there's always a really good variety of text so that people understand the breadth and the depth of the library. And we also want to make sure that we show at least one piece in each rotation that has never been on public display before.
So it's all about providing context, because as I've talked with Bobby Duke at the museum, and I also interviewed Christopher Wolston, most people who come to this exhibit can't read the scrolls. They don't know what they say.
Right, right. The scrolls in and of themselves are a vast field of study. But in terms of what we want to convey to the public when we bring them through an experience like this, is we really want them to understand place, geography, and historical context, so that by the time you get to the scrolls themselves, you're able to understand them a little better and to put them, first of all, visually in a part of the world that you now know a little bit more about, and also understand what was going on historically, so that hopefully it sheds a little bit more light on what we're reading in the scrolls.
You mentioned the paver from the pilgrimage road, and this is something that has just opened up to visitors within the last few months. For pilgrims, it's amazing because this is something that they can do. They can walk on this road and retrace the steps of pilgrims from 2,000 years ago, which is very meaningful for both Christians and Jews. For someone who lives in Jerusalem, what's it like to see that open up?
I've been tracking the excavations from very early on. The more they found, the more interesting the whole thing became. But, it's one thing as a historian to be able to look at sort of these artist renditions of what something may have looked like. And then it's another thing from archaeology to be able to see what it actually looked like. And in this case, because it's so well preserved and because just of the location and the fact that you literally are making that climb up to the Temple Mount, you can really sort of visualize what that journey might have been like and what it may have even felt like to the people who were doing it at the time.
And that's something that you try to reproduce in a traveling exhibit for the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I was just talking to one of the other curators the other day, Dr. Joe Uziel, and we said it's ironic that you have to go to Washington, D.C. to see this sort of breadth and depth of an exhibition around the scrolls, and something like this does not exist anywhere in Israel. So we were actually sort of toying around with the idea of bringing it back here to display because you have to go all the way to Washington to be able to get that sort of context and see all the objects that we've been able to put together in one place.
For those who've just joined us, we're talking with Risa Levitt, the executive director at the Bible Lands Museum in Jerusalem and the curator of the current Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. One of the other intriguing parts of this Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit is the stone from the Western Wall, where people can leave prayers and notes just as they do in Jerusalem when they visit the Western Wall. Are these prayers and notes being collected or preserved in any way? How are they handled?
As far as I know, and I have to say, in all honesty, I'm not really involved with that side of the production. As far as I know, they are collected by the museum and they are handed back over to the Antiquities Authority to take to the authority that handles those notes, actually in situ at the wall in Jerusalem.
Well, you taught at San Diego University for many years. Did you teach about the Dead Sea Scrolls?
San Diego State University, and yes, I taught classes that dealt with early Judaism and Christianity, Jewish and Christian origins, and the scrolls are a very big part of that story.
So, what is the most intriguing thing about the scrolls to you personally?
Whew, that's a big question. I think it's that when you deal with the ancient world, there are a lot of things you get used to seeing all the time, like ceramics, coins, bronze weapons, utensils, and things like that. And certainly in ancient Israel, you almost never encounter anything with writing on it. There have been very, very few discoveries in ancient Israel of inscriptions that are longer than, a sentence or two. And that's simply an issue of preservation. Most of the writing happened on parchment or on leather, and those materials are very susceptible to mold, fire. They just don't survive over time. As opposed to, say, in Mesopotamia, where the majority of inscriptions were done on clay, those do stand the test of time, and if anything, fire makes them even stronger. So when you encounter a collection of written documents that contains over 900 manuscripts, it's truly exceptional. And then when you take a closer look at those manuscripts and start to understand that there are, a variety of different authors here, people with different handwriting, and you can kind of pick up different styles of writing and different handling of different materials, and you can sort of almost feel like you're a little bit back there watching these people actually sitting and writing the scrolls. So for me, it's that feeling that you finally sort of can shed a light on something that otherwise is very, very cryptic. And then, of course, there's the writings themselves. Other than the biblical writings, which most people would be familiar with, the books from the Hebrew Bible, there are writings that we didn't know anything about before the discovery of the scrolls, and the collections of texts that seem to tell us something about the community of people that may have written them. And all of these things are things that we would not know anything about had it not been for this discovery.
Well, as we mentioned, you're the curator at the Bible Lands Museum, which is right across the street from the Israel Museum. The Israel Museum has the Dead Sea Scrolls. Do you have material at the Bible Lands Museum that relates to the Dead Sea Scrolls?
Unfortunately not, because the Bible Lands Museum is actually a museum that deals with all of the lands that are mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. So all of our objects actually come from outside of Israel. We have a vast collection of objects from Mesopotamia, from Egypt, from Greece. So our emphasis is slightly different. But to get back to what you're saying about the Israel Museum, I think it's really important for people to understand the Israel Museum has in its possession seven Dead Sea Scrolls. And those are the scrolls that are currently on display in what's known as the Shrine of the Book, which is that really interesting building that looks like the top of a scroll jar. Other than that, the rest of the fragments, and we're talking again over 900 pieces, are actually in possession of the Israel Antiquities Authority, who are the sponsors of this exhibition. Their collection, ironically, is across the road from the Israel Museum and right next door to me. So it's all one big circle.
So there's a lot of interesting stuff right there. One of the challenges, I think, for people that go to Jerusalem, sometimes you spend so much time in a museum, you get museumed out, and you may not be able to go to all of the places that you wanted to go. In the minute or so we have left in our program, what is the strength of the Bible Lands Museum that maybe you haven't already explained?
The Bible Lands Museum has probably the most extensive collection of ancient Near Eastern artifacts, certainly in Israel. That's really our strong point, is shedding light on all of the countries that are mentioned in the Hebrew Bible, surrounding all of Israel's neighbors, and those cultures and the way in which they related to ancient Israel.
Well, there's a lot of interesting stuff to see in Jerusalem for our listeners who make it to Jerusalem. But right now, as you explained, you can see things at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. that you can't see in Jerusalem.
Exactly. And in fact, the scrolls that have been on display in Washington, the first two rotations and including the next one that'll come in, are not and have never been on display in Israel.
So our thanks to Reza Levitt, Executive Director of the Bible Lands Museum in Jerusalem and Curator of the Dead Sea Scrolls exhibit currently at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. We have a link to the Museum of the Bible website with more information on this at our website at radioscribe.com. We also have information on our website about Artifacts, our biblical archaeology news magazine, and we also have breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority. That's all at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next time for more backgrounders on the Bible through biblical archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.